Hi, my name's Danny McBride. I'm part of the business and enterprise team here in Brighton. I run a graphic design business. I'm based over the road. We're going to have four people on our panel. If I could just call up Jill, who we've heard from. It was fantastic. I thought it was excellent. Jill, you have the sofa.
Thank you.
And we've got Julia Chanteray, she's president of Brighton Chamber of Commerce. She also runs her own business called The Joy of Business. It's great. And we've got Joel Virgo, who we heard from earlier, and Paul, who we've just heard from. Yeah, you're on the stools, guys. Okay, we've had some questions texted to us that hopefully will go up on the screen. So we'll start with those, and we'll also, if there's time, bring them up from the floor as well. So if we can have our first question. Okay, Joel, you mentioned a post-recession Brighton, something we're probably all looking forward to. Can you expand on any ideas you have on how the church will help in a post-recession Brighton?
Can we choose the mic?
I'm actually going to answer that by saying, can we answer that afterwards in this next session? The last session we do, I'm going to do a little bit of talking, a little bit of interviewing with Adrian. I think it might be better to leave it till then rather clog up the time.
Okay, all right, fine. Next question, please. Okay, do you think Brighton and Hove is doing enough to encourage small business? I don't know whether that's referring to the council or just generally. Julia?
Okay. Depends who you mean by Brighton and Hove, doesn't it? So is that all of us because we live in Brighton and Hove? Is that the council? Do we abdicate all our responsibility to the council? Is it some other body that we want to abdicate responsibility to? Is it the business community? Is it the chamber? But the other thing is that I would come back and say that Brighton and Hove actually has a much higher average than the rest of the UK, which has a higher average than the rest of the world, rate of start-up of small business. So we're running about 10% ahead of the UK. Now, that's part of our culture here. What we're not doing so well at is making those small businesses into bigger businesses. So we have a large freelancer culture. We have a lot of people who are working in single-person businesses. And there's nothing wrong with those businesses. I have a one-person and a couple of assistants per business myself. But what we're not doing as a city is growing those businesses that go on to employ people. So I think that's where the attention needs to be, not about the rate of startups.
Okay, John,
do you mind if I ask a further on question? It's interesting. What would you see as the reason why there's not so much of that kind of progress? Is there any particular reason, or is it?
I think there's a number of factors. One is there's a culture of being one-person businesses and freelancers, and there's a supply chain around that. So somebody said to me recently that what we're doing in Brighton is supplying London with cheap labour, which may not be what we actually want as a city. To look after somebody else and subsidise their lifestyles. I think we'd quite like the money to be here, thank you very much. The other thing that I think is a barrier and something that we're trying to work on at the moment with the Chamber is that in order to get from a one person or a two people or even a three people business up to 7, 12, 20, those are the sorts of stages that businesses go through, you quite often need money. And that's the thing that's difficult at the moment, because if you're a three-person business and you've been going for 2-3 years, it's quite difficult to get money in. The banks want to give money to the bigger, more established businesses, so there's a chicken and egg. And it's quite difficult to get in enough money to grow to do that. And there are all sorts of clever things that you can do to grow that organically. So you can look at your cash flow and say, right, okay, what we need is to do an extra 5% to put that money away and not spend it, and then we can afford somebody in 6 months' time and add a new person in. There's things that you can do, so the government, there's a local scheme now where you can take on an apprentice, and that apprentice will cost you £55 a week, which is ridiculously cheap. You know, that's like how much I spend on restaurants and wine. I could get a whole member of staff for that. But I'd have to give up the restaurants and wine. We'll work it out. So there are clever things that you can do, but I think there needs to be some sort of dedicated fund for the city that takes those smaller businesses, the good ones, the ones that have got a good chance, not the people who have invented roller skates for cats or some ludicrous idea. I'll be proven wrong on that one day. There'll be a really successful business doing that. But what we need is a dedicated fund that gives people £50,000-£75,000 to invest in their business, to get a couple of staff in, and to be able to pay 6 months' rent on some premises. And those businesses, there are lots of businesses in the city that could really, really take off then. So that's what I'd like to do. That's my champion project at the Chamber at the moment.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. I think our next question I'm going to target at Jill. As a sole trader starting out, should I be employing the services of an accountant or a bookkeeper?
Both. The difference, a bookkeeper is working with you throughout the year, providing information, management information to you that helps make decisions. If you can find an accountant who offers bookkeeping services, we happen to do that, and we do it for a reason. Bookkeeping isn't a big profit maker for my business, but we're so keen to get to know our clients during the year. A big difference that we're very proud of is we don't just do historical work and give you the bill and say your tax bills, whatever it is. We can give so much more if we work with you during the year. So I realise I would say this, but I think bookkeeping is an essential skill right from the start. Don't think you have to have those skills. There are great people out there, freelancers, apprentices. It really links back to the last question, and something I wanted to add on that was that we work with hundreds of small businesses, 80% of them are stuck in the needing to generate consistent sales. And you keep going around a loop because you haven't got the time. So knowing from the start that some of the tasks that are day-to-day in a business like bookkeeping could be done by somebody better, probably more interested, allows you to focus on those other things. So I would have both from day one.
Okay, I'm just going to add another question that I know is coming later, just if you can answer this. Most business people at the beginning feel they cannot afford an accountant. How can they proceed without that? Can they?
Yes. It depends on the arrangement that you have. Once you start trading as a business, whatever structure you choose, you have legal responsibilities. A sole trader's only legal responsibility in terms of accountancy is to file a tax return and pay their tax and NI. If you get into other structures, companies and partnerships, you have greater responsibilities. You can find accountants that will work with you to ease your cash flow. We happen to be one of them. All of our clients receive a fixed fee quote. In the 20 years we've traded, we have never charged anything but that fixed fee, and it's spread over the 12 months of your financial year to enable you to have the service and pay for it gradually.
That's great. Actually, I know this one. Say the next one says it's starting, asking you, Jill, but I'm going to ask Paul on this as well, please. How do you advise startup businesses who are trying to put a budget together without the benefit of a prospect database, actual sales conversions, figures, etc.?
Classic sales fashion, just make it up. I was talking to someone in the coffee break actually about this, and yeah, I think I made it clear this is a non-strength for me, but you've got to put something out there. So I found it incredibly helpful the way Jill did her funnel. Actually, you've just got to work backwards really and work out how many sales you need to capture the kind of revenue that you want to grow with, and then work it backwards from there. You know, how many, and you can do that historically very quickly in terms of how many calls did you have to make, how many meetings did you have to make, create from those calls, and then you do start to realise that, that there are a lot of numbers involved. But I mean, I said we started our brownie business without any of that. And in some ways, you know, and when we started to win awards, we won the Sussex Food Producer of the Year award a couple of times in 3 years. So it looked really good, and it was going very well. But our message partly was to a lot of young people. We went to a few schools and we'd say, listen, you know, a lot of people say you need an accountant, you need a bookkeeper, you need cash flow forecaster, but you need all that stuff. And the truth is, a lot of people, and we would have been one of them, if we felt we couldn't have started without all of that, we would never have started. So do you get me? There's a kind of... It's a very, very fine line. But now, I would say, having in, with the benefit of hindsight, I would say, yeah, go ahead and do it. If that stuff would floor you and stop you, definitely. But as soon as you can possibly do it after you start, get it organised.
Jill, did you want to add anything to that?
Yes, only that you might not have any figures yourself, but there will be figures out there. If you've already researched your competition, which hopefully you have if you've started a business, try and get some information, find out about how much your customers spend, and then really think through what activity have I got to do to win that business and cost that activity.
That's great. Thank you. Next question. Is it good business to do the right thing, like paying bills within specified term, Julia?
Poison chalice.
Yes. There's two reasons to pay your bills on time. Well, there's multiple reasons. The reason I pay my bills as soon as I get them in is because I'm at risk of being disorganised, and I just want to do that thing. Somebody sends me a bill, I just want to pay it there and then. It'll take me 2 minutes, log into my bank account, I can see how much money I've got as well, good or bad, so I'll happy or sad, pay that bill and it's forgotten about, it's done. I don't have a huge number of bills, so somebody else who's got invoices coming in all the time might want to have, you know, Tuesday mornings I pay all my bills. But the businesses that hang on to them, and remember that businesses like Tesco's, who are not known for their high ethical standards, perhaps, pay on 90 days. Now, of course, that messes up all of their suppliers. But Tesco's do it in order that they've got their money, because if I go into Tesco's, I give them the money straight away. I don't say, oh, I'll give you it in 90 days. I have to give them cash right there out of my bank account. So Tesco's are hanging on to that money for 90 days, and that will be factored into their financial projections, where they take my money, keep it, and then in 90 days' time they'll pay for the chewing gum supplier or whatever it is that I bought. Now, that's how they've put it together, but I would say for smaller businesses, you're not going to get a huge advantage or money or interest on your paying your bills on 90 days. So why not just pay them now? Yeah. And the other thing is, Paul talked a lot about trust and relationships. I know that my clients, through the joy of business, who pay me as soon as I send my invoice out and don't even pay on 14 days, which is my terms, I know that I like them a little bit better than the ones who always forget to pay me. I still like those ones because I like all of my clients. But the ones who pay me straight away, there's a little warm glow around them. So they're going to get more out of me from paying on time. So, yes.
Okay, right. One last question. What should national governments do to make multinational organisations contribute fairly to the societies in which they operate, Joel?
My instinct is, I mean, I don't know how seriously you expect me to answer this in an authoritative way. If you do want me to give you an honest answer of my instinct, I have less confidence in regulative, the effect of regulation than I do in ethos being promoted in society that has more long-term effect, more long-term power. So The role of national governments, in my opinion, would be relatively small in helping to shape the correct ethos. I'm not saying they should be powerless, I'm not saying they shouldn't do anything to help, but they're part of the equation rather than the main lever that should always be pulled on, because the more you pull on the lever of government regulation, the more you end up regretting it years later. I think it's far more to do with the kind of ethos that's fostered in society, and the way that the church is involved in that is extremely important. So that would be my kind of gut level instinct answer. It's not a very educated answer, because I think, as I say, I'm speaking as someone who's looking at it with a broad brush, I think.
5 minutes walk from here, there's a brand new supermarket that's going to open in about 2 months, I think. It's called Hisby on York Place, just by St. Peter's Church, and that stands for How It Should Be. And basically, two sisters, I met them actually here at the Brighton Summit, basically, they have decided, for the last 2 years, they've been social media freaks, and they are doing crowdfunding, so they've got a lot of money. They're on the brink of creating a new record, actually, for the amount of money they're raising. And their whole ethos is that it would achieve that if people like us get behind it. So, for example, I'm not trying to pitch for them, but this is how they're doing it. If you pledge, or you just do it online, you actually give £10 in this crowdfunding initiative, you get £12 of shopping vouchers when they open. So it's a no-brainer. But it's all about community regeneration. They've taken the bold step of opening up in that kind of not-so-glamorous-looking part of London Road. But I believe, you know, that if Costa's just 5 or 6 units down the road, then they must be onto something. So if you get people like that, and they're actually standing for something that will cause the supermarket... Why do you think supermarkets sell fair trade goods? Why do you think they sell stuff that you would also find in farm shops? The farm shops hate it because their USPs are being taken away. It's because people are actually wanting to buy stuff. And I think with Hisby, they look like they could actually really find that nirvana place almost, where they're actually offering great stuff at an affordable price, because farm shops are not the cheapest place to shop. So we all say we support local producers and blah, blah, blah. But if that was really true all the way through, then people like Thorne's Foods on Upper Garden Street wouldn't have gone bust, because... you know, there wasn't enough people bothered to walk up a couple of blocks and get their food from there. So it's a people power thing. It sounds a bit kind of left wing, but actually I think that's kind of, it's the power of relationships. You believe in the vision of someone, you're going to support it. And that will force the Tescos of the world to actually do things differently.
Excellent, thank you. Guys, thank you so much for your contribution today in the seminars and just now.
One more question.
Yeah, go for it. I still struggle with the idea that I want to make money and fear being seen as greedy. Yet I know that there is a place for making money for God's work and kingdom. What can I tell myself to be released from that?
I think zone in, for the sake of time, I'll just zone in on one part of the question to perhaps help. I think that fearing being seen as greedy is quite an eye-opener. We're not meant to fear how people see us at all.
Yeah.
That's the thing to bear in mind. And it's not unimportant how people see us, because Jesus, it said, he grew in wisdom and stature before God and men. And using credibility with people for good things is a wise move. So being a credible person is not unsubstantial. But to live in fear of what you're seen as is actually the opposite of faith. If we live in fear of how we're seen, we will never do anything. And so there's such a thing as being greedy, and we should fear being greedy, because greed is dangerous, bad, destructive, bad for the soul. But to be fearful of being seen as greedy is a distraction, and I think it's a trap which we should do our best to fight. That's the thing to fight against. By all means, look out for greed, but also look out for fear. I think that's the best I could do in a thumbnail version of this. Others have got comments on it as well.
I'd really like to answer that question if I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that right? We started 8 years ago, as Paul said, and I had to have a real paradigm shift in the whole way that I thought about money, whether it was right to have money. You know, I was brought up on benefits, and the church we went to at the time, they were very much kind of get what you can out of the system. You know, you shouldn't be earning money anyway. And that was ingrained in me, and I felt really greedy and bad, like thinking about earning money and everything. And I had to just, I read some really helpful books. If whoever, you know, said that question, I'm not going to give all the books and da da da. I read some really helpful books for one. And I think what really kind of helped me and released me from that kind of way of thinking was having a vision for helping children in need. And I thought, okay, what have I got to give them? What have I got to offer them? You have to have something in order to give something.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like the real key. And it really helped me to think there's a purpose behind earning the money. It's not just, I want a car, I want this, I want that, I want a bigger one and a better one and all the rest of it. It was actually to serve the vision that I had. And it's all about purpose. What do you want the money for? What do you want to do with it? Who do you want to help? How are you going to help? What have you got?
Fantastic. Thank you. Brilliant. Can we just give these guys a round of applause?